Okay, good morning, everybody. As we know, this morning is Esrei B'Teves, a day in which we commemorate the Churban Beis Hamikdash, and this is something that we do all throughout the year. It's not only Esrei B'Teves, it's not only Tisha B'Av, but it seems to be a recurrent theme throughout the year. So I thought perhaps today is a good time to talk about something which is very relevant to us, which has a lot to do with the Churban Beis Hamikdash, and that is the topic of tearing kriya when we go to see the Makam HaMikdash. So we're going to discuss very practical halachas. What do we have to know about that? What do we not have to know? And how exactly we are supposed to do it. The sugya really begins with a gemara in Moed Katan Daf Chava V'min Aleph. The gemara tells us really that there are three different components to the halacha of tearing kriya over the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The gemara tells us, number one, Haroe Are Yehuda B'Churbanan. Somebody who sees Are Yehuda in their state of disrepair, in their state of decadence, when they're on a decline, when there's no yishuv there. Omer, he says, Are Katshecha Hayu Midbar, you say that your cities, Are Katshecha, your whole cities, Hayu Midbar, were turned into desolation, there's nothing there, decadence. Vikareya, and then you rip Kriya. Now, what exactly is Are Yehuda? Anybody know what Are Yehuda is? So that would be somewhere like Hebron or Beit Lechem. That's considered part of the category of Are Yehuda. Have you ever seen anybody who tears Kriya when they see Hebron or Beit Lechem? The answer to that, I hope, is no. So why is that? The Gemara tells us clearly that one has an obligation to rip Kriya when you come across Are Yehuda. So why is it that nowadays we do not do that? So for that, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, Rav Shlomo Goren, across the spectrum, all the Gedolim of the previous generation basically agreed that nowadays this halacha does not apply. And why is that the case? The reason why is because what is the catalyst for the Kriya on Are Yehuda? Why should a person have to rip Kriya? It's because these used to be the Memshelas Yisrael. This used to be the Jewish control. This used to be where the Jewish government was found. So therefore, we bemoan the fact that there's no longer a Jewish government. So nowadays, when the cities are built up, obviously Hebron nowadays is a pretty tumultuous city. However, for the most part, it's under Jewish sovereignty. It's under Jewish control. We run the legislation there as much as we can. And we have dominion over that community. And therefore, since we assume that nowadays it's no longer considered b'churbanan, they're not in a state of disrepair, it's not in a state of destruction, we would assume that on those cities we no longer have an obligation to rip Kriya. That's with regard to Are Yehuda. You go a little further in the Gemara, and I mean, just before we go away from that point, there was an objection that was raised, that perhaps, how can you call it Memshelas Yisrael? The Rambam says, somebody who's Parish Midarkei HaTzibur, somebody who doesn't follow in the laws of the Torah, he's not considered really a part of Klal Yisrael. He's not considered really part of the Jewish people. So there were those who objected and said, what do you mean? Nowadays we have a government, but the government is not following the laws of the Torah. We have a government which does not oppress us and doesn't give us any hardship. However, the government is still not doing what we would expect the Jewish government to be doing in the state of Israel. Obviously everybody agrees to that. So the question is, maybe there were those who objected that still, it's not really considered under Jewish sovereignty because in the end of the day, the government is not performing all of the mitzvahs HaTorah the way they're supposed to, and they're not running a country the way they're supposed to. So my father is very quick to point out that that's a big mistake, because if you look clearly in the history, the Rambam writes it and others, if you look clearly that through the Bayis Rishon, there were governments as well who were in charge of the state of Israel, in charge of the land. And they too were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and they were not doing everything properly, but they weren't oppressing the Jewish people. And therefore, when you have situations like that, that's not called Are Yehuda B'Churbanan. We don't consider that to be in a state of disrepair, in a state of destruction. Obviously, we look forward that there are things that need to be fixed, and there are things that need to grow, but overall, we don't consider that to be Are Yehuda B'Churbanan. Nowadays, you cannot call the cities of Hebron and Beit Lechem and cities like that, you cannot consider that to be B'Churbanan, and therefore the halacha is that we no longer rip Kriya on Are Yehuda B'Churbanan. You go to the next part of the Gemara, where the Gemara says, if you see Yerushalayim B'Churbanan, if you see Yerushalayim in a state of degeneracy, so the halacha is, Omer, Tzion Midbar Haisa Yerushalayim Shamema, you should say that Yerushalayim is desolate and it's not inhabited, V'Koreya, and you rip Kriya over the fact that Yerushalayim is no longer in its state that it once was. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, Simen Tavkuf Samach Aleph. But the Shulchan Aruch says also that we have an obligation to rip Kriya over Yerushalayim. I would venture to say that most people also do not rip Kriya when they see Yerushalayim. And the question is, why is that the case? Well, we already said why Are Yehuda is knocked out. What about Yerushalayim? So there's a major discussion. Yerushalayim is not as simple as Are Yehuda. Yerushalayim, there's a question as to the nature of the obligation to rip Kriya. Why are we ripping Kriya over Yerushalayim? Is it because we don't have Jewish sovereignty, we don't have Jewish control, and if that was the original catalyst, if that was the original reason, that was the nature of the Kriya, then nowadays the same way we don't rip Kriya on Ari Yehuda, we shouldn't rip Kriya over Yerushalayim? Or do we assume no? The original takana, the original institution to rip Kriya over Yerushalayim has nothing to do with the fact that it's not under Jewish control. Rather, it's because of the fact that Yerushalayim is in some way an extension of the Beis HaMikdash. And the same way we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and the same way we cannot offer karbanos nowadays, so too, we do not have a Yerushalayim. What used to happen in the times of the Beis HaMikdash? In Yerushalayim, they used to eat karbanos in Yerushalayim, they used to eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim had an elevated status above and beyond everything else in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, we assume that so long as we know we don't yet have that status returned to us, because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so perhaps that extends also to Yerushalayim. So this is a major question. What is the nature of the ripping of Kriya that was instituted over Yerushalayim? And the difference will be whether or not nowadays we have an obligation to rip. Again, if the nature of the Kriya on Yerushalayim is because it's not under Jewish control, it's not under Jewish sovereignty, well then nowadays it is under Jewish control and we should go ahead and rip and abolish this din of Kriya. However, if you assume that the nature of the Kriya on Yerushalayim really was because it's an extension of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and nowadays we don't yet have the Beis HaMikdash back, so we no longer have the opportunity to use Yerushalayim in the context of a Beis HaMikdash, well, if that's the case, then nowadays as well, we should probably rip Kriya on Yerushalayim. I think generally the practice is that we do not. We do not rip Kriya on Yerushalayim, and that brings us to the third point. The Gemara has a third point which tells us, if you see the Beis HaMikdash before Bana, one who sees the Beis HaMikdash in a state of destruction, of decline, so the halacha is, chayiv l'kro, one is obligated to rip Kriya. But you say, says the Gemara, and this is a pasuk that we should all be familiar with, because the Shulchan Aruch actually quotes the pasuk verbatim. So if you want to underline it, for next time you go to Yerushalayim, next time you go to the Makam HaMikdash, when we rip Kriya, there is something that we're supposed to say upon doing so as well. And the pasuk says, you should say, Beis Kodshenu v'Sifarteinu, our home, which is considered our sacred place, Asher Hilalucha Abaseinu, this is the place that our fathers used to speak so highly of. Haya L'Sreifas Eish, it has been in a state of disrepair, it has been in a state of ruins. V'chal Machmadeinu Haya L'Charava, and all that our heart looks forward to is in complete destruction. So that's what we're supposed to say before ripping Kriya, and then the Gemara says, V'koreya, after you recite that pasuk, one is supposed to rip Kriya. There are those who write as well that you should also say what we recite at the end of Shemana Esrei, Yiratzim Alfanecha She'ibana Beis HaMikdash, you should offer a tefillah at the time that the Beis HaMikdash should be rebuilt and we should no longer have to have this opportunity of ripping Kriya on seeing, on experiencing the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Now, the question was raised, what exactly does one have to see? Some people think you have to go up to the top of one of the buildings there, you have to be able to see into the Har HaBayis and onto the floor. The general assumption is that you don't have to do that. The general assumption is that it's good enough if a person goes on the ground level and you just see the Dome of the Rock, that's enough to show us that there's a destruction. As long as there's a mosque there, it shows that there's no Beis HaMikdash, so you don't have to see the floor. As long as you see the golden dome, the Dome of the Rock, the mosque up there, then that's good enough to obligate a person to rip Kriya, and one has to do that immediately upon seeing the Makam HaMikdash. Now, let's talk about some of the halachas of Kriya. That's where we're going to spend the rest of the morning, because Kriya is something that a lot of people get wrong, and we don't do it right, and the halacha is if you do Kriya wrong, you have to do it again. So we don't want that to happen. No reason to waste two begadim, no reason to destroy two shirts. So let's discuss some of the halachas of Kriya. Number one, halacha number one that's most important is the Gemara in Moikatan Daf Chaf Amud Beis. Says the Gemara as follows. This is number Gimel on the Sur sheet. The Gemara tells us, Amemar Shachav Le Barbarei. Amemar tragically lost a grandchild, the son of his son. Kara ilave. So he was so distraught over the loss of his grandchild, he ripped Kriya over that loss. Even though generally the halacha is that a grandparent does not have to rip Kriya over a grandchild if you have some situation like that, but still, he ripped Kriya. So you'll ask, isn't it Bal Tashchis? You always have to ask that question. Let's say we had a situation recently where somebody was adopted. An adopted child is not really obligated to follow all the halachas of Avelis and all the halachas that a regular child would follow when a parent passes away. So the question is, what do you do if it's an adopted child? Well, you can sit on the floor. There's nothing wrong with sitting on the floor and being noig Avelis, but the question is, what about ripping Kriya? And some say, well, how can you rip Kriya? It's Bal Tashchis. You're destroying a beggar. You're destroying a suit, a shirt. How can you do such a thing? And the answer is, it doesn't really apply, because when we talk about the nature of the din of Baal Tashchis. So we always try to teach our children, don't waste and don't throw things out and don't do something that's just going to destroy something for no good reason. Well, the Gemara tells us clearly, if it's the tzarech tikkun ha'adam, if it's for the purpose of man, that would be permissible. That's not called just the nature of Baal Tashchis, that wouldn't apply. Meaning Baal Tashchis means, don't destroy something for no reason. If I happen to be an adopted child and a parent passes away, and it's going to help me feel part of my mourning, it's going to help me heal if I rip kriya just like all the other children, if I'm just a part of everything else like everybody else, that's not called Baal Tashchis, because I'm doing that for my own purpose. I'm doing it not just to waste, I'm doing it because it helps me express my emotion at a time which I'm very vulnerable, in which I'm very sad and I'm very hurt. So that, we assume Baal Tashchis would not apply. I think the example that's given in the Chayyadim is the following. Let's say somebody is born with 7 fingers on a hand, and they can function normally and everything's fine and it doesn't really make a difference, but the problem is when it comes time to get married, they're concerned, who's going to want to marry me if I have this kind of, you know, different looking hand, and they're concerned that it's going to ruin their prospect of a shidduch. So in a case like that, the Chayyadim writes clearly, you're allowed to have a surgery to remove the 2 fingers. Aye, it's Baal Tashchis, how are you allowed to do that? God created you with 7 fingers, so why are you allowed to get rid of 2 of them? The answer is, that's not a Baal Tashchis. You're doing that for the purpose of Tikkun Adam. I'm doing that not because I'm destroying my body, not because I want to mutilate myself, but rather I'm doing it because I want to give myself a better chance at enjoying life to its maximum. So therefore, in a case like that, Baal Tashchis would not apply. There was an interesting question that was raised. What do you do nowadays? I know nothing about business, but I would imagine this is a pretty simple fact. That if you have a market, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, it was a big discussion. When you have a market, an open fruit market. So imagine, if they're going to have too many in excess of apples one day, so then it's going to destroy the parnas of everybody, because apples are going to go down in price. Right? Simple economics, I think, supply and demand. So generally, we assume if you have an excess of apples, so now it's going to destroy the market for everybody else. You have an excess of cucumbers. But what do you do? If we have an excess of cucumbers, how can you throw them out? It's Baal Tashchis. But on the other hand, how can we put them on the market if it's going to ruin, if it's going to destroy all of the market value of cucumbers and apples? So how do we do such a thing? So it was a major discussion in Israel. Do you have a right to take all of those excess of cucumbers that are going to destroy the price, the market value of the cucumbers on the market? Do we have a right to take that and just throw them into the river and destroy them and send them to another country, whatever it is, even though they might spoil and even though they're going to be destroyed and even though we're going to be wasting them? Is that called wasting? And many assume that that wouldn't be considered wasting. Why? Because that's not a violation of Baal Tashchis. Obviously, you're not doing it just because you don't like God's cucumbers, you don't like his apples. You're doing it because you want to make sure that there's a steady market. You want to make sure that people are able to make money and to have a business. And because that's our reason for doing so, that would not be a violation of Baal Tashchis. You come back to the Gemara where we started, if those remember where we're up to. The Gemara says over here, even though generally a grandparent is not supposed to rip kriya over a grandchild, that's not the obligation. If the grandparent feels that that's going to help them express their emotion, and one feels that they were so close to the grandchild and it affected them so negatively when the grandchild passed away, one would certainly be allowed to do so. The Shulchan Aruch even writes, if you feel that a friend passed away and you're so close with that friend and you feel that it will help you to deal with the pain, to rip kriya, to be like everybody else, so one would be allowed to do that as well. So we go back to the Gemara. The Gemara says as follows. He ripped kriya. Then a couple of minutes later, after Amema rips kriya over his grandchild, all of a sudden the son walks into the room, and the son is the one who just lost his own child. So Karabape, Amema feels, now that I see my son, it's like a whole new experience. I feel like the grandchild has died again. It's such a powerful experience when he saw the son who was bemoaning the loss of his child, so he felt the need to rip kriya again. So now he rips 2 shirts. Now the Gemara says, Idkar, now he remembers, oi, I ripped kriya once, I ripped kriya twice. But Idkar, he reminded himself to Miyushav Kara. He reminded himself that he ripped Kriya while he was in a sitting position. And he said, I made a mistake. I ripped 2 shirts, but I did it wrong. So he goes ahead and he rips a 3rd shirt. Why? Because one is supposed to rip Kriya standing up and not sitting down. So says the Gemara, Amar le Rav Ashi la Meimar, Kriya de Me'umad Minalan. How do you know that you have to stand up when you rip Kriya? What does that have to do with ripping the Kriya? So the Gemara goes on to bring Psukim. Perhaps we learn from Eov, because it says when Eov heard the terrible news about his lot in life, the Pasuk says that he stood up and he ripped Kriya. Then the Gemara says, what do you mean? Maybe Eov just did that because he jumped out of his seat. He was so startled by everything he heard, that's why he stood up. So the Gemara tries to prove it, but in the end of the day, we assume that one has to rip Kriya in a standing position. And the Rishonim have a discussion. What's the halacha if a person bidiyeved? What if a person did the Kriya while sitting down instead of standing up? So this is a big discussion in the Rishonim. The Shulchan Aruch paskins la halacha that if a person sits down while ripping kriya, the kriya must be done again. So this is something to keep in mind. Sometimes when you go to the kotel and you're tired because you're walking up the steps and down the steps and up and down the hills and everything, whatever it is, you finally get to the Makom HaMikdash and you sit down and then you rip Kriya, that would not be a good Kriya, that would not be fulfilling our obligation. One would have to rip Kriya again. Now, what does it mean to rip Kriya again? It's important to note. Let's say my father was born into a generation where they were very careful about not wasting anything. My father still cringes when he sees somebody throw out a soda bottle. You know, it's 5 cents. He can't, you know, he has that kind of mindset. So my father also has a hard time ripping Kriya on his shirts because you're destroying a shirt. And how can you get rid of a shirt? But the halacha is that you have to. So my father does what the Shulchan Aruch says, which I assume most of us do not do. My father will save a shirt and rip Kriya on it twice. The halacha is you're allowed to rip Kriya again as long as you're Mosif on the Kara, on the Kriya that you did before. So the halacha is you're allowed to take a shirt that you already ripped in the past, and you're allowed to continue the rip next time you go back. Now, for most of us, I shouldn't say most of us, for myself, I always feel very uncomfortable when I rip Kriya and you're walking around with that shirt the rest of your experience standing in the holiest place in the world. It just makes me very uncomfortable. So what I do is, I always put on a second shirt, you rip Kriya, and then you take it off 5 minutes later, throw it in the garbage. That certainly is fulfilling our obligation. However, if you're the kind of person that will wear that shirt and then go back to your hotel and then only change the shirt once you get back to the hotel, you're certainly allowed to save the shirt for the next time you go back. Especially someone like my father was there every 2 months and he's going to have to end up ripping, you know, many, many shirts a year. So generally, we would assume that one is allowed to be mosif kriya al kriya. So the same would be over here. If you find out that you've done the kriya in an improper fashion, one would not have to rip a new shirt. One could just take the shirt that they already ripped improperly and rip it again. Yes? No, a scarf is not...
Has to be a shirt?
Has to be a shirt, yeah. A shirt or a t-shirt, something. Obviously, you have to be careful about how you do that. But it has to be... And we'll talk about the permutations, exactly how to do the Kriya, and you'll understand a little bit more as we go forward, yeah.
Multiple layers. I was told you could do a layer underneath.
So we'll get to multiple layers. We'll get to that. Yes, we'll get to that as well. All wonderful questions. We'll get to all of this, yeah. The jacket, what was that?
Korea.
Yeah.
They
so we'll get to that, to the question of jacket. The halacha is if you only rip a jacket by a funeral, if you only rip a jacket, you are not in fulfillment of the obligation. We assume al aviv al imo, on a parent, person has to rip all the begadim that are keneged the lev. Person has to rip. Now, it's important to note, underwear obviously do not count. I was just at a shiva, and some rabbi told a person that he's not allowed to change his underwear the whole shiva. That is not correct. It's a mistake. It's not correct at all, and the guy's wife is going crazy. And it's just not the case. It's not true. The halacha is we assume that undergarments are considered beged shel zayah. That's not called a beged shel kavod. What we wear on top, what we wear, a shirt, a scarf, anything like that, is called a beged shel kavod. That shows our dignity. We wear nice clothing when we go outside. Something that's an undergarment is what we call a beged shel zayah. That's called a sweat garment. We wear that because it's disgusting to wear our clothing directly on our body, so we put something in between. Obviously, that would not be included in this whole discussion, and certainly when somebody is sitting shiva, they're allowed, even though you're not supposed to change your clothing for the week or whatever, unless it gets dirty or whatever it is, but certainly one would be allowed to change the undergarments. And then let's continue our discussion, and then we'll see if there are any questions left at the end. There is a discussion in Shulchan Aruch in Yaradeya Hilchos Kriya in Simon Shin Mem, where the Shulchan Aruch says, Al Shar Hakrovim, on the rest of the relatives that pass away that one has to rip Kriya for, one could either be Korea Biyad or Bekli. What it means is, one can either do it by hand, which is very hard to do nowadays, to rip by hand, or one can take a scissors and rip. Al aviv al imo, says the Shulchan Aruch, if a person, Rachmana Litzlan, loses a parent, the halacha is one has to rip with their hand. Why is that? Because if you rip with the scissors and you make a whole beautiful trim and you snip it just perfectly and it looks so nice, that's not really proper kavod for our parents. If a person loses a parent, you're supposed to show, I'm so enraged and I'm so infused, I ripped my begadim and it's not so neat and it's not so clean, and anybody who sees me understands right away that I'm mourning the loss over a parent. So therefore we assume on a parent, one has to rip kriya biyad and not bekli. Now, nowadays our begadim are made in such a way that it's almost impossible. You can't just take this and start ripping, it doesn't work. So obviously the achronim right, you start the rip with the scissors, but then, whatever, use the scissors as little as possible and then you continue on. What does this have to do with our discussion about churban beis hamikdash? The discussion has to do with it because the Magen Avraham writes that when a person bemoans the loss over the Beis HaMikdash, that is like the experience of losing Aviv V'Imo. That's not like losing another relative. That's like losing a parent. Which puts it a little bit into perspective what we're supposed to be feeling. Unfortunately, we don't. But what we're supposed to be feeling when we go to visit the Makom HaMikdash b'Churbana is, it's like the loss of Avi V'Imo. That's what the Gemara, that's what the Magen Avraham says. And therefore, says the Magen Avraham, really that should translate into one using a scissors as little as possible or a knife as little as possible. Really, when we go to the Makom HaMikdash, we should really do it with our own hand, the same way one would rip Kriya for Avi V'Imo with their own bare hands and not with a scissor. So again, obviously nowadays it's hard to do it without the aid of some sort of cutting device, but that just means you should start the cut, but the rest of it should be done with our own hands. There's a very important halacha when it comes to kriya, and that is the following. The Gemara writes in Moed Katan, number Dalid. The Gemara tells us, Amar Shmuel, kol kera she'eno b'shas chimam, eno kera. Any kriya that's done, not at the point of distress, of irritation, of wretchedness, when a person feels the loss very strongly, that's not called a kriya. So for example, somebody loses a parent, and nobody told them that you're supposed to rip kriya. So 3 weeks later, obviously you're still bemoaning the loss of the parent, but 3 weeks later they're going to wake up one day and start ripping kriya. That's not called a kriya. Or you take, for example, let's say you have the halacha is, if somebody's there, b'shas yitzias neshama, if somebody is present at a time when there's a loss of life, one has to rip kriya even if you are not a relative. Even if you are not a relative, if you happen to be in the room, not if you're in a side room, but if you're in the room when the experience of yitzias neshama takes place, one has to go ahead and rip kriya, even if you are not a relative. The discussion is, what about a relative who's going to ultimately rip kriya at the levaya? Do they have to rip again? There's a major discussion about that, but simply we understand that a person who's there at the time of Yitzias Neshama must rip kriya because we're bemoaning the loss of life. Nothing to do with being a relative. You're bemoaning the fact that there was a loss of life, and therefore one has to rip kriya just from the very nature that you were there at the time when the Yitzias Neshama took place. So let's say like this. Let's say unfortunately someone's on a bus one day, somebody right next to them has a heart attack, drops dead right there, they pronounce him dead on the spot, so you were there at the time, b'shas Yitzias Neshama. So what do? I'm wearing my beautiful suit, I'm wearing my beautiful clothing, I'm on my way to work, what do you, I have to ruin my suit, I have to ruin my clothing, how can you say such a thing? So you know what, I'm going to run home, take a taxi home, change my suit, turn into something else, take my old suit that I don't really care so much about, take my shirt that's not so nice, and now I'm going to go and rip kriya because this morning I was on a bus when the person was there and lost his life. The Acharonim say that obviously would not work. Why wouldn't it work? Because again, by the time you take the bus home and you're on your way back and now you're changing and everything, the shock factor has gone away. You're no longer in that state of unbelievable disappointment that you felt right away when you saw the Yitzias Neshama. That's why the halacha is, somebody who's there b'shas Yitzias Neshama must rip their clothing. Now, there's a major, major discussion that takes place about a doctor and a nurse or a Hatzalah member that's there quite often, unfortunately, when things like this happen. And this is a major question. The Shulchan Aruch says, anybody who's there at a time of Yitzias Neshama must rip kriya. Well, that should include a doctor or a nurse or any medical professional. However, there's a reason why we don't do that. The reason why is because we're concerned that if a doctor or nurse is going to know that every time they're there, they're present at a Yitzias Neshama, what's going to happen? They're going to run out of the room. They're not going to be interested in taking care of the patient at the end of life. And because we're concerned that maybe the doctor or medical professional will stay away from the person who's deathly sick at the end of their life because they're not going to want to have to ruin their clothing, therefore we have absolved medical professionals generally. We have absolved the obligation for medical professionals to rip kriya because we're concerned that it's going to lead to something that's going to be detrimental to the person who's at the end of their life. That's generally the assumption. Now, so the Gemara tells us a kriya always has to be done at the time of hysteria, right at the moment of shock, of panic, has to be done at the shas chimam, and that applies to Yitzias Neshama as well. Let's say, take for example, the Radvaz writes, what if somebody experiences a Yitzias Neshama on Shabbos? Somebody happens to experience a Yitzias Neshama on Shabbos, and those who were present want to know, obviously we don't rip Kriya on Shabbos, let's just make that clear, but those who were present want to know, should they rip Kriya after Shabbos is over? The answer the Radvaz says is no, because once Shabbos is over and time has elapsed already, we assume that you're no longer in that state of hysteria, you're no longer in shock from what took place, even though you are a little bit, but it's not the same. We don't call that Shas Chimam. That's what the Acharonim write, and therefore we would assume that one would not have to rip Kriya after Shabbos is over. Similarly, we have a halacha, if Rachmana Litzlan, we had a couple of weeks ago, I think it was a shul in New Jersey, Edison or something, that went up in flames, very historic shul. I think 13 Sefer Torah were burned in this fire that took place. And obviously there's a whole halacha of Kavod Sefer Torah, and you have to make a levaya for them and bury them. There's a whole process that has to take place. However, someone who's present when a Sefer Torah is burned, the halacha is one has to rip kriya for that as well. So the question was raised, the Radvaz asks, what's the halacha if a person unfortunately sees such a thing on Shabbos? So do you rip kriya after Shabbos is over? And again, the Radvaz tells us that there would be no obligation to rip kriya after Shabbos, because again, that is not considered a Shas Chimam after Shabbos is over. And therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in the name of the Chazon Ish that the same would apply if one goes to the Makom HaMikdash on Shabbos. If one goes to visit Makom HaMikdash for the first time on Shabbos, and then you want to know after Shabbos should you rip Kriya, the answer to that is no, because it already has worn off, and you don't have that Shas Chimam any longer. You don't have that panic, that hysteria that you felt the first time that you went to the Makom HaMikdash on Shabbos proper. Yeah. For what? That's a very good question. Does one have to rip Kriya when there's a loss of life for a non-Jew? That's a very good question. Well, it doesn't mean that we don't value non-Jews, but the halacha is that we do not have to rip Kriya. And the reason for that is the following. The Gemara, when it tells us that one has to rip Kriya for the loss of life, the Gemara says that it's similar to a Sefer Torah Shenisraf. The Gemara says it's the same experience as a Sefer Torah that goes up in flames. So therefore what? The same way we'd have to rip Kriya if one experiences a Sefer Torah going up in flames, so too one would have to rip Kriya if you see the Yetzias Neshama of a Jew. Why is that? Because we assume, Rav Soloveitchik has a big arichus on this, he suggests the reason why is because we assume the life of a Jew is like a Sefer Torah. The life of a Jew is infused with Torah mitzvahs. You'll say, what about somebody who's not religious and doesn't keep any Torah mitzvahs? But still, Soloveitchik said that every Jewish person in utero is taught Kala Torah Kula, which gives us a certain Kedusha. It infuses us with a certain Kedusha Satorah. Soloveitchik argues that the only Kedusha in the world stems, I think we spoke about this last week or 2 weeks ago, all Kedusha in the world stems from the Kedusha Satorah. There's no such thing in the world as having a Kedusha that doesn't come from the Torah itself. And therefore, Soloveitchik argued that that's the reason. Everybody always asks, why does the Malach teach us Kala Torah Kula in utero, and then the story goes that the Malach slaps us on the lip or whatever it is, and then we forget everything? Why is he doing that? Just an act of futility? What's the reason to do such a thing? The answer is, Rav Soloveitchik said, it's in order to infuse every Jewish person with a Kedusha Satara. So it doesn't matter if later on in life the person keeps to the Torah or not, obviously we're supposed to, but even if a person doesn't, or even if a person doesn't know any better, still we assume with the loss of a Jewish life, there is some sort of loss of a Sefer Torah, and therefore one has to rip Kriya. When it comes to a non-Jew, even if they are the biggest tzaddikim, even if they perform many mitzvahs in their life, we assume that's like tashmishe mitzvah, just like a sukkah, just like a lulav. After we are finished with our use of a sukkah or a lulav, we are allowed to dispose of it. So too, after the loss of life of a non-Jew, even if they've done tremendous chasadim and mitzvahs in their life, we assume that's like a sukkah and a lulav, which we did wonderful things with while it was being used for the mitzvah. But afterward, that is not considered like the loss of a Sefer Torah proper. One would not have to bury such a thing, and one would not have to rip Kriya on an item like that either. Let's go a little bit further. When it comes to Kriya on the loss of a relative, the halach is al kol ha-mesim. The Shulchan Aruch says that on all other relatives, besides for aviv v'alimo, one has to only be korea tefach. One has to just rip the garment one tefach. However, al aviv alima, when one is ripping kriya for the loss of a parent, the halacha is that it has to be done ad shemegala es libo, until the person's heart is uncovered, is revealed, which means a lot more than a tefach. It has to be a little bit further down. And that's the reason why the achronim say there's a difference. If you'll ever notice, you go to a levaya, the rest of the relatives rip kriya on this side, because that's not the side of the heart. So they rip on, right, on the right side. The children of the parent who passed away rip kriya on the left, because the halacha is you're supposed to do ad shemegala es libo. I got a fascinating shayla when I was in the white shul. Somebody, we were, after the Levaya was over, generally the rabbi helps the person rip Kriya, and they teach them how to do it. So I went over to this person. There were a bunch of Avelim who all had to be done together, so Rabbi Feiner had asked me to help out. So I went over to one of the people, and I was helping him out. So he says to me, no, Rabbi, wait a minute. I said, what do you mean, wait a minute? Now's the time to do Kriya. So he says, no, I have a Shaila. I said, what Shaila do you have? We're about to do Kriya. We do the Kriya the same for everybody else. He says, no, I have a condition called dextrocardia. Anybody know what that is? So that's somebody whose heart is flipped. Now, it's not a condition that makes anybody sick, that he's able to live a natural, healthy life like everybody else, but I think the organs, the internal organs, happen to be flipped. So he said to me, what do I do? Parent passed away. Generally, on the parent, you rip kriya on this side. As he says, why do you rip on that side? Because achi galas libo. But he said, my heart is on this side, so maybe I should rip on this side. Fascinating, Shaila. I had no idea what to do. I assumed it wasn't written about in Svarim. So I said, look, do you want everybody to start asking questions and saying, oh, look, the rabbi did it wrong, and he did it wrong, and why didn't he tell him, and what's going on? Do you want everybody to find out that you have this condition? So he said no. So I said, you know what, let's just leave it the way it is. I wasn't sure if it was right or not, but I just assumed that that's what we should do. I later on asked my father the question, and he agreed that that was probably the right thing to do. Yes, sometimes you have a fluke, but the halacha is generally when al aviv alimo, you rip on the left side, on the rest of the relatives, you rip on the right side. There is a discussion, even though I didn't find the discussion about kriya per se, there is a discussion about hilchos tefillin. Let's say in tefillin, one is supposed to wear the tefillin shel yad keneged halev. So the question is, somebody who has the lave on the other side, maybe they wear the tefillin on the other hand. Okay, major discussion. If you have the problem, we'll worry about it You know, a woman who has the problem will worry about it. We have a lot of problems. Okay. Let's go a little bit further about the mitzvah of kriya. The Shulchan Aruch says that it has to be done on the front of the shirt and not on the back. The kriya has to be done on the front of the shirt and not on the back. And that's something to keep in mind as well. Then the Gemara tells us in Moed Katan Daf Chaf Beis Amud Beis, that's number Hey on the source sheet, the Gemara says, Al Kol HaMesim Kulan, on the rest of the relatives that pass away, Ratza Mavdil Kami Safa Shalo, Ratza Eino Mavdil. Kami Safa means, back in the days, imagine the... Are there not enough source sheets there? None left on the beam? Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. There's an extra copy here. On the rest of the relatives, we assume that, you know, imagine to yourself, back in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, they used to wear one garment of clothing, one article of clothing. It was like a robe. So I would say the easiest way to visualize that is a t-shirt, right? So you have a t-shirt. Not like nowadays when you have a shirt that has all different parts. You have a t-shirt. So let's just use that as an example. So on all other mason, one is allowed to rip just the tefach. You could just go arbitrarily on any part of the t-shirt and rip. However, says the Gemara, when you have Aviv al Imo, Mavdil, one has to go all the way. Sorry, but we'll do a little demonstration. So basically, one has to rip Aviv al Imo, one has to rip Kame Safa. Kame Safa means from the edge of the garment. You can't just arbitrarily take your shirt and start snipping away. Al Aviv al Imo, it has to be done from the edge. From the edge means either over here or it means over here on the collar. So we assume that for Aviv al Imo, it has to be done from the edge. Therefore, translate that into the halacha of Makam Migdash, which is like Aviv al Imo. One shouldn't just arbitrarily rip a shirt in the middle, even if you're wearing a t-shirt. One should rip all the way from the top, all the way from the kame safa, from the edge of the beged, that achigala eslibo, until one uncovers their heart. So that's what we generally assume is the obligation of kriya. Now another point is, the kriya has to be done, the pischei tshuva writes, the kriya has to be done vertically and not horizontally. You have to do the kriya in an up-down position, it can't be done side to side. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And the other point which is important is the following. The Gemara tells us that when one rips kriya, you have to be left with two sides of a beged with a rip in the middle. Sounds obvious, but it's not so obvious. Why? Well, back in the days when they used to have, let's say, like a t-shirt, so obviously if you make a rip in the middle of the t-shirt, you have beged on both sides. But nowadays, let's say we wear a shirt. So what's going to happen? So often you see people, they just make a little rip over here, and then they rip down, right? Because you have to rip down. So they just cut in a little, and then you rip down. Now, what's the halachic definition of a beged in the Gemara? What's the halachic definition of a beged in the Gemara? The Gemara tells us it's dalet etzbos. In order to be considered a beged, it has to be the size of four fingers wide. So think about it. So how do you rip a shirt where you have four fingers wide of beged on both sides with a rip in the middle? Why, first of all, why is that the halacha? So my father generally explains it as follows. The reason why it's because it should be obvious to everybody who sees you that this wasn't just arbitrarily that your shirt happened to get caught on something and it ripped. Well, if it rips right next to the edge, you'll say, oh, maybe it got caught on something. If you cut in, dalet etzbos, and then you're left with two sides of a beged on both sides with a rip in the middle, it's clear that you obviously did this on purpose. And it's supposed to be clear to everybody that sees you that you're ripping kriya for a purpose. It's not just that it happened arbitrarily and by mistake. So generally we assume one has to think about that as well. When you rip kriya, so it's not so simple. You have to go like this. You take a scissors or a knife or whatever it is, and you cut in dalet etzbos, right? You have to cut in four etzbos. Only then, now the kriya can't be done side to side. It has to be done up and down. So you have to cut in dalet etzbos, and only then do you rip down ad sheyigala eslibo. Okay? So it's a little bit complicated. Not so simple. So that's generally... Yeah? Yeah. So women is a problem, but... So it's actually interesting. We do find, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, I'm sorry, the Pischei Tshuva writes in Shin Mem, in Yeredeya, when it comes to Ilchus Kriya, Al Aviv Al Imo, he says, you should have other people doing it because that shows even more Agmas Nefesh. It shows like, I can't even do it myself, I'm so distraught over this fact, you should have other people being Misayeya a little bit. So that's what generally, by a Shiva, by a Levaya, generally the rabbi will start a little bit and then the Ava will do the rest, just to show more Agmas Nefesh. So when it comes to Kriya on the Kotel, it's not always a possibility. You know, so it's an interesting question. The halacha is you only do it if you're there, if you haven't been to the Makam HaMikdash in the last 30 days. That's generally the halacha. My father once told me that he heard Rav Avadi Yosef had a suffix about what if a person, when they started having the Kotel cam, now nowadays I don't think anybody's interested in watching the Kotel cam anymore, but I think when it first came out it was very cool. So people used to look at the Kotel cam to see what was going on, even though you can't see anything. So the question was, do you rip Kriya when you look at the Kotel cam? So Rav Avadi Yosef said, obviously not, because you don't have the same hargasha, you don't have the same feeling when you look at a video screen, when you look at a computer, you don't have the same feeling as being there in person. But then the question was in the opposite direction. What if in the past 30 days I saw it on the Kotel cam and now I go there in person? So maybe it already took away from my feeling. Maybe it already took away from my experience because I already saw it on the computer a few weeks ago. So maybe that case, I wouldn't have to rip Kriya. Apparently, Rav Avadi Yosef said you could be makel in both directions. You don't have to rip Kriya here and you don't have to rip Kriya there because your emotions have already been calmed down a little bit by the fact that you've come in contact with the Makom HaMikdash via a computer screen. I don't know. Not sure. I think most of us probably don't watch the Kotel cams that often, so the question is not so relevant, but if you have the question, you should ask somebody who knows a lot more than I do. You get to Shulchan Aruch Yerudei and Hilchos Avelos, and we get to the question that was asked over here about all your begadim. I forgot who asked that question. How many articles of clothing must one rip? So the halacha is as follows. When we come to a levaya, the halacha is that generally those who are not children only have to rip one article of clothing. You're supposed to rip the shirt. However, al aviv al ima, the halacha is you have to rip kol begadav. You have to rip all of the begadim. And the question is, if that's the case, well then why is it that when it comes to kriya on the makam hamigdash, which is supposed to be like the experience of aviv al ima, why is it that we don't find anybody who rips all their begadim? How come when we have a levaya for a parent, we rip all the clothing, but when we come to the makam hamigdash, we don't do so? That's question number one. Question number two is, when it comes to Chol HaMoed, if somebody unfortunately suffers a loss of a relative on Chol HaMoed, the halacha generally is, a big shayla in Shulchan Aruch, the halacha generally is that we do rip Kriya on Chol HaMoed. Unless the Ramah says, unless your community has a practice that you specifically don't, but generally the Ramah says, if you're starting a new community, then the practice should be that you should rip Kriya even on Chol HaMoed. We don't sit Shiva on Chol HaMoed, but still, we rip Kriya on Chol HaMoed because we're having a Levaya. That's what we generally do. So why is it if we go to the old city, if we go to the Makam HaMikdash on Chol HaMoed, we do not rip Kriya? That's clear. You don't rip Kriya on Chol HaMoed. So why is that the case? If you don't rip Kriya on Chol HaMoed, why is it that we rip Kriya for a family relative, but we would not rip Kriya over the Makam HaMikdash? That's question number two. Question number three is, why is it that we find by a levaya, unfortunately, sometimes when you have young Avelim, so the halacha is if the child is higia lechinuch, if the child is already old enough that they understand and they're already shaking lulav and they're already sitting in sukkah and they're already wearing tzitzis and a yarmulke or whatever it is, so if unfortunately they lose a sibling or a parent, the halacha is they're supposed to rip kriya. Chinuch, the same way we would be mechanech them to do everything else. So why is it that when it comes to a levaya or the loss of a relative, a child who's higia lechinuch would rip kriya, yet when it comes to the halacha of kriya on Makam HaMikdash, a child, there's no din of chinuch on a child for kriya on the Makam HaMikdash? So again, we have three differences between the kriya on the Makam HaMikdash and kriya on a parent. Number one, why is it that kriya on a parent we would do even on Chol HaMoed, whereas kriya on the Makam HaMikdash we would not? Why is it that kriya on a parent we would rip all of our begadim, whereas on the Makam HaMikdash we don't rip all our articles of clothing? And number three, why is it that there's this idea of chinuch by kriya for a parent, whereas by kriya on the Makam HaMikdash, we do not find the aspect of chinuch, and we would not tell a child who's young, who's chinuch age, we would not tell them to rip kriya when they go to the Makam HaMikdash b'churbana. So these are the three questions that are very striking when you think about the halacha of kriya on the Makam HaMikdash. So my father suggests the following. It's interesting. Generally, we lump together the halacha of avelus and kriya, and we say, somebody's a novel also has to rip kriya, because we assume those two things go together. You have to sit shiva, you have to keep shloshim and yud beis chodesh, and you also have to rip kriya. The Gemara says it's not so. The Gemara says that's not the case. The Gemara assumes, and this is the line, kriya lechud ve'avelus lechud. The Gemara assumes that there are two separate obligations. Obligation number one, when somebody suffers the loss of a relative, is you have to be noeg nihugi avelus, which means shiva shloshim yud beis chodesh. There's a separate obligation, happens to come at the same time, but it's nothing to do with avelus. There's a separate obligation that when somebody loses a relative, they also have to rip kriya, but it's nothing to do with hilchas avelus. That's generally the assumption that we have when we talk about the loss of a relative and ripping kriya. There's one obligation to rip kriya. There's a second obligation to sit shiva and to be noeg all the nihugi avelus. Two separate obligations. When you think about the kriya, the nature of the kriya on the churban beis hamikdash, why are we ripping kriya on the churban beis hamikdash? It's a expression of our avelus. That's not the same kriya as we do for a parent. Again, the kriya that we do for a parent is because we have a separate obligation. We have obligation number one is avelus, That's to express our sense of mourning. Obligation number two is that we rip kriya also. There's a separate mitzvah to rip kriya over a parent. When you come to the Beis HaMikdash, there is one obligation, and that is to express your emotion of avelus by ripping kriya. That's what we do when we rip kriya. It's an expression of our avelus, which is not the same as what we do when we rip kriya for a parent. Okay, is that clear? And therefore, the questions are answered. There is no such thing as shiva on Chol HaMoed. Let's say somebody suffers a loss on Chol HaMoed. You don't start the shiva until Chol HaMoed is over, until Yom Tov is over. Therefore, when you go to the Makom HaMikdash, one would not rip kriya on Chol HaMoed again. Why? Because one is not supposed to express emotions of avelus on Chol HaMoed, and therefore, we don't rip kriya on Chol HaMoed for the Makom HaMikdash, because that kriya for the Beis HaMikdash is one of an expression of avelus. Ripping kriya for a parent, even though we don't sit shiva on Chol HaMoed, we do rip kriya on a parent because that's considered a separate obligation outside of the avelus factor. Is that clear? Anybody have questions? Is that clear? So that answers question number one. Question number two. Why is it that we're not mechanech children to rip kriya on the Makom HaMikdash as well, the same way we're mechanech them to do everything else, and we are mechanech them by a levaya to rip kriya for their parent? Why is that the case? The answer is because they have a separate obligation by a levaya to rip kriya. That's the same. If the child would be old enough to wear tzitzis and to shake lulav and to sit in sukkah, we would be mechanech them to do that. So too we're mechanech them to go and rip kriya over the loss of a relative. However, when it comes to kriya on the Makom HaMikdash, which is an expression of our avelus, well, the same way that we find ein chinuch ba'avelus, why are we mechanech children to shake lulav? Why are we mechanech children to wear tzitzis or to do other sorts of mitzvahs? Why do we do that? Why do we teach children to say brachas when they're 5 years old? The reason why is because when they become a bar or bas mitzvah, we don't want to have to start teaching them everything when it really counts, so we want to get them used to it. We want to have a regilus. If we make if we regulate them into the system, then it will be more natural for them once it really counts, once they become bar or bas mitzvah. However, when it comes to aspects of avelus, there's no chinuch ba'avelus. Why? Because we hope that by the time they become a gadol, it won't be relevant. We hope that they'll never need it. We hope that by the time the child gets older, he will shake lulav, he will put on tefillin, he will wear tzitzis, he'll make brachas, and therefore we assume you have to teach them all those things. However, we don't train a child to fast on Tisha B'Av or to fast on Asar B'Teves. Why not? Because we hope that by the time they become a gadol, the Beis HaMikdash will be here, we won't have to do such things. And that's the same reason why there's no kriya, why there's no chinuch for a child on the kriya over the Makom HaMikdash. Again, because we're not trying to show the children that we're mechanech them in inyane avelus, because we hope that at the time when they become a gadol, this whole mitzvah of kriya on the Churban Beis HaMikdash will not be relevant any longer. And therefore we assume there's no such thing on kriya for avelus. Now, of kriya on avelus for being mechanech children. Now, there's a very famous misnomer, and that is if you go to the Makom HaMikdash on a Friday afternoon, that you don't have to rip kriya. That is a major mistake. It's not true. It never was true. The Chazon Ish writes that he thinks the whole thing is made up. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes like this, as well as Reb Eliashiv writes like that. Reb Moshe Feinstein writes like this, that it's a major misnomer. It never existed. The halacha never was the case. And if one goes to the Makom HaMikdash on Friday afternoon, you do have to rip kriya. It doesn't make a difference, unless you're already wearing your Shabbos clothing. But generally, you have people, sometimes will land on a Thursday or a Wednesday, and they'll wait. They'll push it off to go on a Friday afternoon because they say, oh, you don't have to rip on Friday afternoon. It's not true. How did this mistake creep in? So my father has suggested in the past, maybe the mistake crept in because on Erev Pesach, we considered Erev Pesach to be a Yom Tov. Because Erev Pesach is when they used to shech the Karban Pesach, so it's already considered a quasi-day of Yom Tov. So if one goes to visit the Makom HaMikdash on Erev Pesach, then you don't rip kriya. So maybe the mistake extrapolated from there, and we took on other assumptions and assumed that Erev Shabbos also, but it's a major mistake. Somebody asked me last week if you have to rip kriya on Chanukah. They happen to have gone to Eretz Yisrael on Chanukah. The answer to that is yes. Chanukah is not really considered a Yom Tov. The same way we would sit Shiva on Chanukah, unfortunately, if someone had the case like that. Same way you would sit Shiva. So also we have an expression of Avelis, of kriya on the Makom HaMikdash, on Chanukah as well. Now, there's a major shtick that people play that they switch shirts, right? If you've ever been to certainly in a boys' camp, I don't know what happens in a girls' camp, but you know, before they get there on the bus, everyone's switching shirts and they say, oh, well, once it's not my shirt, so obviously I don't have to rip kriya. Take, for example, when is the halacha stated that you don't have to rip kriya if you're wearing somebody else's beged? What it means is the following. If I have a wedding and I borrow somebody else's gown because I don't have such a beautiful gown, and now I happen to visit the kotel that night, I'm wearing somebody else's gown, and I say, hey, how can I rip this other person's gown? It's a $1,000 gown. It's not really proper to rip their begadim just because I happen to be going to visit the kotel. It's not really fair. That's when the Shulchan Aruch states that you don't rip kriya because you borrowed somebody else's beged. But if on the bus, on the way to Yerushalayim, when everybody knows that they have an obligation to rip kriya, everyone starts switching, swapping shirts because they assume they don't want to rip kriya, that's a joke. Why? Because your shirt has an obligation to Rib Kriya and my shirt has an obligation to Rib Kriya. That's not what the Shulchan Aruch meant when he said that if you borrow somebody else's beged, you don't have to Rib Kriya. That's not what we're talking about. So generally, that's something we really should not do. There is a question Shlomo Zalman Auerbach asked. Let's say somebody lives in Yerushalayim, which I assume most of us do not, but what if somebody lives in Yerushalayim? The halacha is only if you see the Makam HaMikdash every 30 days, do you Rib Kriya? Now, not everybody who lives in Yerushalayim sees the Makam HaMikdash every 30 days, so do they have to Rib Kriya if they go there within the 30 days? So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, you know, somebody who lives in Yerushalayim and doesn't bother to go to the Makam HaMikdash within 30 days, forget about the Kriya because they obviously don't care enough about the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, somebody like you doesn't deserve to Rib Kriya because you obviously don't feel it. If you felt it enough, you would take the opportunity to go visit every 30 days. But if you don't care enough to go visit once every 30 days, forget about the Kriya. It's not for you. But let's say somebody lives out in Ranana, and really, they only come in once every 5 months. It's a big tircha for them to come in. I think the simple understanding is that they would have to. I was in Eretz Yisrael in the summer. I always feel uncomfortable. Every time you go to Eretz Yisrael, all of the Israelis look at you like they've never heard of this idea of Kriya. I'm not sure why they look at us so strange. It's in Shulchan Aruch, it's clear. And certainly, I was with an Israeli at the time who lives in the Shtachim, who had not been to the Kotel in a few months, and they saw me take out his scissors, and they're like, what are you doing? And I said, you know, there's a halacha, Tavkuf Samach Aleph in Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Tisha B'Av, we're told that you're supposed to Rib Kriya. And they said, we never heard of this, you're making it up. I said, I'm not making it up. So what do you do when you have something like that? You Google it, and you find right away, it comes up. I showed them, I said, look, it's even in Hebrew. You know, you do Google in Hebrew, and it came up. And it was clear, and Shulchan Aruch says that you have to Rib Kriya. So I said, I think you guys are also obligated to Rib Kriya because you haven't been here in 6 months. They're looking at me like, thanks for your visit. We're not interested in you coming again. But I think the simple understanding is that an Israeli also, if they haven't been there in 30 days, they also have to Rib Kriya. There is a shaila that's raised. What if a Summa? What if somebody has a terrible eyesight and is not able to see and experience the Makam HaMikdash? Do you have to Rib Kriya as well? So I think the Achronim write as follows. The Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenberg writes in his Tshuvas that I think when you have a Summa, since the Gemara uses the terminology, if you look back at number one, Haroe, somebody who sees, meaning the experience of Churban is not the same if you cannot see it. And therefore the understanding is that if you cannot see it, somebody who's a Summa, somebody who cannot really see on their own, I think the general halacha is understood to be that one would not have to Rib Kriya in a case like that. Let's talk about one final halacha, and the reason I mention it is because I think probably nobody in the room has ever heard of it, but the Mishnah Berurah does quote it, and it really does have a source that dates back very far, and that is the following. Sometimes we go to Eretz Yisrael, and let's say you land at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're busy, whatever, you're busy unpacking, and now the Shkia is at 5, so you know, you go for Ma'ariv, and you get there, and you Rib Kriya, and then you go out to eat right afterward. Well, not so simple. Not so simple. Why not so simple? The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Kaftar of Ferach. And this has a source in the Gemara, as we'll see in a minute, that the Yom Shekorea Kriya Al Churban Beis HaMikdash, the day that a person, the Jewish calendaric day, that a person rips Kriya, one should refrain from eating Basar V'Yayin. One second. Now this is a very important halacha, because very often a person will go to the Makam HaMikdash, rip Kriya, and then will go right away to go out to eat. And it's something that we don't think about. Now why is this the halacha? The halacha is because if it's supposed to be the experience of losing Aviv Al Imo, so if right after the Levai, would you go home and go to a restaurant and start eating Basar V'Yayin? You would never do such a thing. It's highly inappropriate to do something like that. So to over here, the assumption is that it's not appropriate if we're feeling the loss of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, it's not appropriate to go ahead and follow that experience of Kriya by eating Basar V'Yayin. Where does this come from? Where does the minhag start from? It developed from a Gemara in Shavuos Daf Chaf Amud Aleph. Let's look at the Gemara together. The Gemara has a number ches. Maseches Shavuos is all about somebody takes a promise upon themselves, some sort of strange nether, something, I'm going to eat potato chips today, I'm going to eat potato chips tomorrow, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, all sorts of strange things. So the Gemara says, what happens if a person says, Ha'omer, somebody who says, Hare Alai, I promise upon myself, now let's just make it clear, I am not making such a promise, but if somebody does, Shalo ochal basar v'shalo eshtayayin. I'm going to refrain from eating meat and from drinking wine and eating meat. Ki yom, the same way I would refrain, ki yom shemes bo'aviv. The same way there's a practice that we fast on the day of a yahrzeit, and we don't eat meat and wine. So too the person says, I refrain today, I promise I will refrain, the same way I would refrain on the day of a yahrzeit. Or, says the Gemara, ki yom shemes bo'ploni, or ki yom shenerek bo'gedaya ben achikam. Tzom gedaya, we know the practice is that we all fast. So a person gets up one fine Tuesday morning and he says, you know, I'm not going to eat meat and drink wine today the same way I would fast on Tzom Gedalia. Or, says the Gemara, I'm not going to eat meat and drink wine today, Kiyom shera Yerushalayim b'churbana. I'm not going to eat meat and drink wine today the same way I wouldn't eat meat and drink wine if I just went to the Beis HaMikdash that's in a state of disrepair, it's in a state of destruction. Says the Gemara, Aser, if I take such a promise upon myself, I'm not allowed to eat meat and drink wine today. So Tosfos points out over there, where do you get such a crazy idea? Somebody wakes up one morning and says, I'm not going to eat meat and drink wine today the same way that I wouldn't eat on the day that I saw the Makom HaMikdash. Whoever said that? So Tosfos says, obviously you see that the practice always was that somebody who goes to the Beis HaMikdash in its state of disrepair, in its state of churban, refrains from eating meat and drinking wine for the duration of the day. So, there's a very interesting tshuva sefer called the Shalos HaTshuvos Mishnah Sacher, which you can read on your own. I just put it on here because I find this story is fascinating. Anyone ever heard of Rabbi Sacher Teichtel? Sacher Teichtel, anyone ever heard of the sefer Eim HaBanim Smecha?
Yeah.
If you haven't read it, it's worth it. The sefer Eim HaBanim Smecha is a fascinating sefer. Rabbi Sacher Teichtel was born in Hungary in 1885. Now, at the time, there was a major discussion way before Hakamas HaMedina. There was a discussion about should we be into Zionism or should we not, the beginning of the 1900s. One of the leaders of the camp who was anti-Zionist was the Munkat Rebbe, the Minchas Elazar. He felt it was the worst thing on the face of the planet. We should have nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. Stay away from it. Don't go along with the Zionists. They're going to destroy everything. Okay, whether he was right or he was wrong is not our business. But basically, that's what he felt. It is our business, but not for today's year. So, he was wrong, period. That's, you know, my father always says, if the Satmar Rebbe was alive today, he would get up in front of everybody and say, I was wrong, it can't be, right? You look at what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, it's impossible that anyone could say that nowadays this is not called part of the Geula, this is not called part of the salvation of the Jewish people, it's just impossible to ignore history. Okay, he happens not to be alive, so he can't say such a thing. But there was a major discussion in the beginning of the 1900s about whether or not we should be in support of starting, of establishing a Medina. So the Munkat Rebbe was the major opponent, and he felt this was Yaharik Val Yavar, the worst thing in the world, don't get involved, stay away from it. And his greatest Talmud was Rabbi Sacher Dov Teichtel, who felt, also, you have to be a total radical, anti-Medina, horrible thing to do, stay away from them. Then the war broke out, and he started reconsidering, maybe it's a mistake. Because look, Har Tzion Tia Pleita, where are we going to find our salvation if not for the state of Israel? And how are we going to get out of here if we don't figure out a way? And in the end, ultimately, he was killed in Auschwitz. But before he came to that, he came to the realization that the Hashkafa all along was a major mistake. And even though he revered his great Rebbe, the Minchas Elazar, he felt that the whole Hashkafa was wrong. And to prove to the world that the Hashkafa was wrong, and to prove to the world that nobody should make the same mistake that he did and so many of his friends, he wrote the book Eim HaBanim Smecha, which was a book encouraging everybody for Chibas Eretz Yisrael. Because he didn't want anyone to make the mistake that he did and have the mistaken notion that he lived with for so many years. So that's the history of the person called Rabbi Sacher Dov Teichtel. Now in his Tshuva Sefer, which nobody knows about, he has a Sefer called Eim HaBanim Smecha, which a lot of people know. It's in Hebrew and in English nowadays. But there is also a Sefer of Tshuvas that he wrote. And in that Sefer he points out that why is it that in Shulchan Aruch, if this is really the halacha that one has to rip Kriya upon seeing a Makom HaMikdash, well that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, but if on the day that you rip Kriya, you're not supposed to eat meat and drink wine, well, why is it that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote that halacha? Why is the Mishnah Berurah bring it, but the Shulchan Aruch himself doesn't? Rabbi Sacher Dov Teichtel suggests the reason has to be because the Shulchan Aruch never dreamt that it would be relevant. The Shulchan Aruch never assumed that there was going to come a time when we're going to have Yerushalayim back, and we're going to be able to go visit the Makom HaMikdash, and we're not going to have a Beis HaMikdash yet. There's no such thing. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch never thought of putting it in because it wouldn't be relevant. So he said that's why the Shulchan Aruch left it out. However, he suggests that it's something that we have to keep to even today. And therefore, Rabbi Sacher Dov Teichtel writes in Shalos HaTshuvos Mishnah Sacher, he says, it's something we should be speaking about, it's something we should be reminding people of, because it's something that exists and it's something that we should think about the same way they thought about in the times of the Gemara, and the same way the Gemara tells us that that used to be the practice, so too, that should be the practice nowadays. Now, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach does point out, let's say you're going to Eretz Yisrael, sometimes you go just for a wedding, and you're in and out. So you're going to go, and you want to visit the Kotel. So you're going to have to go and rip Kriya. Then you're going to go straight to the wedding after that. You're going to say, oh, now I can't eat at the wedding. So if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that obviously let's put this all into the proper context and to the right perspective. This is the minhag. However, he says it's a midas chasidus. So if a person is going to Eretz Yisrael for a wedding, and you happen to be going and you rip Kriya, and then you go straight to the wedding, obviously you should not refrain from enjoying yourself at the wedding and from having basar v'yayin. But in a normal case of events where you're not going for such a purpose, and you're going to Eretz Yisrael, and then right after you go to Rib Kriya, you want to go out to eat dinner, you should think about the fact that there's what to refrain from eating basar v'yayin, because again, One is supposed to have the attitude as if one has lost Aviv al Imo. Let's just conclude with the following passage. There's a beautiful Tshuva Sefer by Rabbi Avadi Yosef, and it's beautiful on so many levels. It's called Shalos Tshuva Sechavidas, 6 volumes. In my opinion, I think it's a must-have for every Jewish home. But anyone can read it. It's the easiest Hebrew, and it's amazing. Why is it so easy, and why is it so amazing? Reason why is because the Shalos Tshuva Sechavidas was written... Anybody know what it is? It was a radio broadcast. People used to call in with questions, and Rabbi Avadi Yosef, these were the answers that he gave off the cuff. Pretty amazing. What? Shalos Tshuvas, Yechavidas, Yud Ches Vav Hei, Dalet Ayin Tav. It's an amazing 6-volume set, not so expensive. But he talks about all, basically, these were questions that simple Israelis were calling into the radio about. So what? They weren't coming up with the wildest questions in the world with all the intricate shalos and halacha. They're calling with the simple questions. How do you make a Berachas HaTorah? And what do you do about this? And when do you leave out that? And when do you say this bracha? And when do you do this? And about all sorts of very important, very fundamental halachas, and it's written in a very simple style because this is what was said over on the radio. So it's a very beautiful sefer to read. So here the question was raised, Ha'im lo higia hasha l'shanos es hanusach shebetfilas nachem ha'ne'emeres b'tishabav. On Tishabav we recite an extra paragraph in Shmona Esrei, and what do we say? Nachem Hashem Elokeinu, you should console us, and you should give us back Yerushalayim, and it's ha'ir ha'chareva v'ha'bezuya v'ha'avela v'ha'shomeima, and Yerushalayim is the city that's destroyed, and there's no one there, and it's desolate, and it's empty. Maybe it's come time to change the prayer. How can we say such a thing? Really, Yerushalayim is desolate and it's empty and there's nobody there and it's totally destroyed? I don't think Yerushalayim has ever been as built up as it is today. There have never been as beautiful homes like we have today. There's never been so many yeshivas and shuls and schools and everything like we have today, and never so many children and adults traveling and going and visiting. So how can we say Yerushalayim habzuya v'ashomeima? And the question that was raised on the radio was, maybe we should change the nusach hatfila that we say on Tisha B'Av about Yerushalayim. So he goes into a whole lengthy discussion first about whether or not you should ever change a nusach hatfilah. Okay, that's question number one, not for now. But then he says, what about this very important question? And he says that perhaps this is something that we should consider. However, he writes in the end that really we're still talking about Kimakam HaMikdash Usvivo Sav. The Beis HaMikdash, which is in state of ruins, which is in disrepair, Usvivo Sav, and those cities that are around it, Nisunim biyad zarim sone Yisrael, Yushalayim ha'atika odenam alei gilulim shel akum. It's still full of churches and mosques. And he says, Bekama knesios tmeos, v'asher al yidei kamreim min hagem dam Yisrael nishbach kamayim. Don't we know how many pogroms the Christians have caused, how many lives they've taken away over the generations, and because they have churches there, how can you say Yushalayim is built off? We can have all the houses in the world, and we can have all the people living there, and we can have everything. In the end of the day, it's still considered habzuya, v'achareva, v'ashomema. That's not the way Yerushalayim is supposed to look. And he goes on to say, to think about the following point. Is there anything that you can imagine as a bigger churban than this? That we have batei knesios in Yerushalayim that are still destroyed, that haven't been fixed, and that we have mosques all over the place, and we have churches every other block. On a day like Asar B'Tevis, we should think a little bit about this. This is what our heart desires, and this is what we look forward to. The Gemara tells us, "Kol dar shelo nivne beis hamikdash biyamav, ki'ilu hu hechrivo." Any generation that the beis hamikdash has not been rebuilt in your days, ki'ilu hu hechrivo. It is as if you destroyed it. It is as if you are responsible for the destruction of the beis hamikdash. Yes, we come and we dance and we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim and it's wonderful. But don't forget, yes, we celebrate the fact that we have a Kotel and we're able to visit, but don't forget, what is it? It's the remains of a Beis HaMikdash, it's not the real thing. Don't forget that we're still in a state of Avelus, we're still in a state of mourning. And he writes, Shuusrid Beis Mikdashenu Kamosha Kasuv, Zachar Tiskar, you have to remember the fact that that's what we're looking forward to. We're not just talking about something which is not relevant. We're going to visit a place which, yes, we're excited we can go visit, but you have to always remember what's the context of that place. Context of that place is all about Churban. It's the fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. It reminds us that one day we should have that, but it also reminds us that right now we do not have it. Umelvad zeh, Haruchni Yishal Yerushalayim hu b'navav v'noseinu rabim b'shafal ha'madrega. He says, forgetting about the Churban. Even just the simple ruchnius, the level of spirituality in Yerushalayim, in some way, is b'shafal hamadrega, is not where it's supposed to be. Kemo shapir shebemaimer ezker alokim ve'amia barosi kalil artila benuya v'Yerushalayim mushpelas ad sheol tachtia. Sometimes Yerushalayim, even though it's inhabited, even though we have people living there, even though we're building it up again, but still Yerushalayim in some way is ad sheol tachtia, it's down in the dumps. Ki ma ma'od yidav lev, it should hurt, it should pain our hearts. Kal achar ledvar Hashem. Al hispakrus hador michayi hatorah v'hamitzvah. Shouldn't we be sad that so many people are living in Yerushalayim and just don't understand and don't appreciate what it's all about? Chinuch alafim u'revavas miyaldi Yisrael lelo Torah lelo mitzvahs. Do you know how many Jews there are in Yerushalayim itself that are not being educated to a lifestyle of Torah and mitzvahs? V'heres chomas atznius v'hamusar. There's a breakdown in all of our standards of tznius and of understanding of what life is all about. V'ribui chilulei ha-shabbos, how much chilul Shabbos there is with the stores that are open, with the cars that are driving. V'hafara sidri ha-kashas v'od kahena v'chahena boshnu v'gam nechlamnu. We are embarrassed over this. It's not something to be proud of. It's not something to celebrate. We're not going to change the prayer that we say on Tisha B'Av, Yerushalayim habzuya v'hashomema v'hachareva, because, in fact, in so many ways, it still is bzuya and chareva. And he ends off at Tzomach Hamishi, we pray that the Tzom, that the fast days that we have now, Asar B'Teves and Tisha B'Av and all the others, Yiyah L'Beis Yehuda L'Sasanu L'Simcha L'Mo'adim Tovim, we pray that all of these fast days should turn into sasan v'simcha and into yamim tovim v'yikuyim banu simchu es Yerushalayim v'gilu bakal ohavea. May we merit the day when we have to celebrate in Yerushalayim sisu ita mesos kalam esablim alea ki ish asher imo tenachamenu, the same way one's mother is able to always console them. Kein anochi anachamchem uv'Yerushalayim tenuchama. We look forward to that day when the Ribbono shel Olam himself will give us a nachama the same way a mother is able to grant a nachama to her children. And that's what we look forward to. B'mehera v'yameinu. Amen. I wish everyone a very meaningful fest.